I really would love it if I could never have another case where I'm suing someone because they didn't do a good job, addressing their obligations to create an inclusive space. I would love it. I would love it.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone, once again to Rochester Business Connections on the Real Business Connections Network, where I talk to Rochester, New York, my hometown, some of our greatest industry leaders. And I'm excited to have Morgan Levy on the show today. Morgan, what's up? How are you?
Thank you. I'm good. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to talk to you and to give you guys a quick introduction. Morgan is an attorney and educational consultant. Founder. She runs the J. Morgan Levy Firm, PLLC, and more recently, MM Inclusion Solutions, which I still don't know quite too much about. So I'm really excited to talk about that today. But to kind of paint a broad stroke, both of these companies and everything you do is kind of based around a bigger mission, right? Talk a little bit about why you do what you do.
So I do what I do because I am super committed to ensuring equal access to all humans, to all of the educational services that we have in our community, which are immense, and also to all of the great businesses that we have. And so my goal in both the law firm and in MM Inclusion Solutions is to help people create spaces where no one is excluded, where everyone is welcomed, where everyone has an equal seat at the table.
We're diving so deep so quickly, but I'm wondering, is that ever possible, or can we just make it more better? Like, is it possible to truly be more inclusive, or do we have a long way to go?
I think we do have a long way to go. I think we have a long way to go, and we've also come a long way. I had a great mentor once when I was in a role that was focused on affirmative action compliance, who I was talking to him about how excited I was that we'd rolled out the first online mandatory training about anti-harassment discrimination. It was sort of like giving myself a little pat on the back of, ooh, look what we did. That's amazing. Yeah. And he was wonderful. It was Paul Burgett, the late, great Paul Burgett. And he was fantastic at telling me that I am really glad that we've made this step forward, but there's a long, long way to go. And we shouldn't be congratulating ourselves on one achievement, because there's a whole sea of problems that still exist that we need to continue to engage with. And they change often too, as our society changes, as we become more diverse and in different ways. There are new problems and new challenges that arise that we have to try to prepare our communities for, how to engage in the right way. Like when I first started doing diversity and inclusion work, it was the only topics that were focused on were race and gender, or sex. So, people who were differently abled were not part of the conversation when we were talking about diversity and inclusion. People who were speakers of other languages were not included when we thought about, what our program should be, what our efforts should be. So I think we're always going to have a lot of work to do. But I think we're our community in Rochester. I've been really pleased to be here and to see how many people are really committed to making this community safe for everyone.
Yeah, safe, inclusive, give people the equal opportunity, regardless of if you're tall, short, bald, high income, low income. We all
right.
I joke about this. It helps. It really does help that I am a white male. That's not beyond me. But I'm also bald and Jewish, which are little nuances that aren't always in that equation. And my family basically immigrated to America. Like, there's a lot of little things. I'm not complaining. I've had a great life. But there's a lot of nuanced things that are complicated. And it's not like you can just check the box, right, and say, oh, we've done it. It's something we continue to do. And you mentioned there's a long way to go, but we've come a long way. I do want to get into your backstory before we go deeper into this, just so people can get to know you a little bit better. Because when we first talked, like, to my understanding is you weren't born into like a vibrant, diverse city. You were in a different scenario and maybe even learned the hard way. So tell me a little bit about how you became passionate about what you get to do.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. And I'm so grateful that I learned the hard way. I feel really privileged to have learned the hard way. So I grew up in this little town in Connecticut. And it was a very not diverse town. So there was one family of color in the town when I grew up. It was geographically a large town. So like our high school had, you know, I want to say, you know, maybe 1,000 kids in it because it was such a large space, but it was pretty much all white kids. And that's what I grew up with. And there were all sorts of comments that were made on the regular in my childhood growing up that I didn't necessarily understand were hurtful because it was the soup that I grew up in. That was the messages that I was given. My parents are both educators and were very liberal and very passionate about equal access. But they weren't there when we were like hanging out in the Dunkin' Donuts parking lot, you know, after school on a Friday night and hearing all those messages. So I then went to undergrad, went to law school. Both my undergrad and law school were not diverse places as well. There was a bit more diversity, but really still very white spaces. And then when I graduated from law school, my first job was at NYU in the Village. And I was just all of a sudden thrown into one of the most diverse communities in the country and was constantly exposed to different things and was constantly checked by my friends, by my colleagues at NYU when I said something that was harmful. And I feel like that was such an amazing gift that they gave me to pull me aside after a meeting and say, hey, Morgan, when you said this thing, this is what that word means to me. And that's the context within which that word has become part of the vernacular. And it's harmful. And you need to know that. And it was hard to know that I was doing something, that I did lots of things, to be really frank. Like I made mistakes over and over again and still make mistakes. But it was a gift for them to take the time out of their day, to take that moment and share with me that. And it was also the grace that they gave me to come with that assumption of, I don't think you want to be this person. I don't think that you're trying to be someone who's harmful and hurtful. And that was kind of a risk for them to approach me with that perspective because they didn't know me well. You know, it maybe I was someone who harbored, you know, negative feelings about people because of their inherent characteristics. But I feel like in that first job after law school, I grew more than I had grown in my entire like undergraduate and law school career, just being with different people and learning about them and them sharing with me what I was doing and giving me the chance to correct it.
You know, that's profound. It's sometimes awkward just to tell someone that they have a little piece of snot in their nose, but to call someone out on something when they could be guarded to, you know, you don't know what the response is going to be. What are your thoughts on when you do hear someone say something that maybe they're not poor intentioned, but their actions or their words are showing something different? And how do you call someone out without putting them in a position of like defensiveness and guardedness?
Yeah. And I mean, I think it really depends on the context. So, you know, I wouldn't necessarily call someone out if I was just walking down the street and I heard someone say something and we're just passing each other, you know, walking by. But if it was in a space where I had a relationship with that person in some way, shape, or form, at work, you know, in your rec kickball, whatever, I think that approaching it from the perspective of assuming best intentions is what's been helpful for me. So assuming that we're part of this community together, and it's likely that they didn't mean to be harmful in what they said, and just also being really direct about it too. So it can be really difficult. I think you have to practice a lot to figure out what's the right way to intervene in that moment. If it's someone you know, if it's in the work context, being able to say, listen, when you said X, I heard Y, and this is why that's not okay from my perspective. And I want you to know that that's what I heard, and other people may have heard it too. And I want to give you the opportunity to correct that and make it better. Obviously, it's harder when you're in situations where there's a power differential. So over my career, I worked in higher ed for a really long time. I spent a lot of time being the only woman in a boardroom of older, typically white men, yes, who had a lot of power. And there were certainly times at the various institutions that I worked for where one of those individuals who was like my boss's boss's boss said something that I was like, this is not okay. This is not an okay thing to say. That perspective is harmful and is not likely to help them achieve the goals that they're trying to achieve if they continue to espouse that view. And in those cases, I wouldn't in the middle of the meeting raise my hand and say, hey, you know, Vice President so-and-so, I think that that was really inappropriate and here's why. But, you know, I might go to my boss and say, hey, in this meeting, this thing happened. I don't really know how to approach it. Can you brainstorm with me? Is there someone who's at that same like peer level, yeah, who may be comfortable going to that person and saying, look, you know, I heard this thing and I want to make sure that you know that that's how you were received in that room. And I want to give you the chance to change it. So I don't think you necessarily have to be the person all the time to do it. If you're in that situation where it's, would likely not be productive, you can always lean on others.
The humility there is incredible, because it's like you could, whether you're speaking to them or coming to the third party and leaning on the third party, it's basically when they said X, I heard X or felt this way, this is why I could use your assistance. Like, can we come up with some ideas of how we can tackle this? Because if I felt this way, I presume others might have as well. It's very soft and it's very humble. And I feel like it's very collaborative rather than just calling out your boss in front of the board. Yeah. It's not a good call half the time. So.
No. Because then they will go on the defensive. They'll immediately, you know, that's not what I said. That's not what I meant to say. It doesn't give them a chance to, you know, to reflect and hopefully make a change if they did something wrong.
Yeah. So you go to school and you realize more than before that there's a whole world out there and some of the things they're saying probably aren't perfect. People call you out. What comes next? Do you become an attorney?
Well, so I've had a weird and wild career, I think. Maybe it's not that wild. Other people would probably be like, that's really boring. But so I worked in higher ed for a really long time. And I worked in roles that were like student conduct and student discipline. And then I moved into more compliance HR positions, which were really about like, instead of the undergraduate student conduct, it was adult student conduct of, you know, people are still making mistakes and that's kind of always the role that I've been in, is there's been some behavior that's negatively impacting a community. How do I help make sure the community is safe and tended to? And then how do I help that person grow from that experience? And I've never wanted to be the, you know, let's just punish. I don't think that's an effective strategy to, I mean, sometimes there's natural consequences. Sometimes people have to leave their job or they have to leave their school because the choices that they made. But I've always wanted to approach problematic behaviors with an opportunity of, you know, this is a moment. You can sit in this space and you can learn from it. And to some extent, if you do that, it doesn't matter what happened in the past because you've now grown and changed and learned, or you could sit in this space and not be ready for that learning opportunity and then likely just repeat that mistake again and eventually have bigger and bigger consequences. So I, in my most recent job before going into private practice, I was working in the diversity and inclusion space. I did compliance for a while and then served as the Title IX coordinator for a very long time, trying to help both prevent and, if bad things happened, appropriately respond to allegations of sexual harassment. And then 2020 came, and like so many people, I had a lot of realizations about my life and how short life is in general. I mean, I feel like I was so both inspired and devastated by that year because I saw, I think we all saw just how amazing our communities could be if we all moved towards the same direction, the same goals at the same time. I mean, we changed everything about our lives. We changed the way that we work, the way that we learn, the way we interact with our families, the way we see our doctors. I mean, telemedicine now is like a huge thing. It's not going away.
That's amazing. Yeah.
It's so amazing. And there were such great benefits to those quick shifts for people who might have been on the outskirts before. So like, for example, I represent people with disabilities in if they're having trouble at work or they're having trouble at school getting access to what they need. And before 2020, when we'd have to go to court, when we'd have to do a deposition, when we'd have to do something to so that they could express their needs, so that they could have their rights respected, they'd have to physically go to that space. And if you're a person with a mobility impairment or you have a mental health condition that makes it difficult to leave your home, that was a barrier to getting access to your rights. And now that's normal. You know, we do depositions over Zoom. We do court over Zoom. I mean, it's been a huge awakening and a expanding of opportunity for a group of people that really were not, at least in my experience, there was not compassion for that when you'd make a request to say, look, the courthouse only has one ADA accessible entrance. There's a, wow, you know, 50-yard distance between where the car needs to be parked and where that entrance is. Then you have to go and ask someone to use the lift because it's locked all the time. We don't leave it open. And then, you know, like this was the process of like just to go to court so that you can say, hey, my employer's not, you know, respecting my rights, or my school isn't letting me use my accommodations. And so anyway, like that kind of stuff, I was so inspired. Like, look how cool this is. We can shift so quickly towards inclusion. And then on the other hand, we also saw behaviors of people who were, you know, using fear and anger to try to exclude more than include. Like I think of the toilet paper hoarders and the people who would like buy up all the, these are the like lowest level examples, but people would buy all the hand sanitizer and, you know, sell it out of the back of the van for an exorbitant price. And so, you know, we're always going to have this dichotomy, but I feel like the fact that we can be inclusive. We can very quickly open up spaces was really inspiring to me. And I had a moment of thinking, I can do more in a different space. So I've always worked for like huge institutions. Sure. And you can do a lot in that institution to impact the people who are engaged in that institution. But it's still just one type of space. And so, you know, for like a higher education institution, it's whoever was accepted to that school. And there's certainly criteria and barriers that eliminate access for a bunch of people based on those. So,
wait, so Morgan, not everyone has two perfectly working arms and legs with all the right pieces of paper. They're neurotypical and just show up and ace everything with their beautiful laptop and camera. And like, not everybody lives that life.
I know it's, and, but like I was in a space where really all of the places that I've spent the majority of my career were really highly selective, well-resourced educational institutions. And so, I felt like I was missing a lot of opportunity.
I'm not knocking anybody or anything, but it's funny to me that there's so many different kinds of people in the world, from physical ability to mental cognition to race to culture to family, and to assume that everyone has the same piece of paper and the same opportunity is silly.
And knows what to do with it. And, you know, like, I feel like that's the equity versus inclusion thing, is that the, you know, people, at least in I think most higher education institutions, there's this idea of, you know, this is like how it's done. This is how you prepare for entry into college. This is how you, you know, of course, you're going to go to get your master's after you graduate. And so this is the exact structure that you have to follow. But it's from this really like white male heteronormative perspective. And so, like, who's making these rules? And if we're not telling everyone about the rules, then they're not going to be successful in these places. And, you know, there's so many other opportunities for people to learn that aren't hemmed in by those expectations.
Yeah, I'm a heteronormative white male, and my perspective is pretty boring. I learned so much from seeing and hearing stories from people that are different than myself. Yeah. And I guess enter MM Inclusion Solutions. So that's, that kind of spurred out of this need. We've come a long way, but we have a long way to go. And then that's basically why you started this new endeavor.
Yeah. So, so I really would love it if I could never have another case where I'm suing someone because they didn't do a good job, you know, addressing their obligations to create an inclusive space. I would love it. I would love it if everyone was like, oh, I absolutely, I'm always
put yourself out of business. Put yourself out of business, Morgan.
That's what I want to do. That's my goal in life. So I've been, trying cases about this and trying to understand, like, why is this so difficult for some spaces to implement? Like, why is it hard to understand you can't discriminate against someone because they are a single parent? You can't discriminate against someone because English is not their first language, you know, all of these different characteristics. And I've learned that there's not a lot of high quality, affordable education opportunities for these topics. So, like, for Title IX, for example, so I was Title IX coordinator forever. It's a federal law that prohibits discrimination on the basis of sex and gender, gender identity, sexual orientation. I like live Title IX. It is, you know, just in my brain all the time. And it seems, because it's something that is literally like a part of me at this point, it seems hard for me to understand how schools struggle with it. But then when you look at the opportunities for them to learn, it's a little bit of a desert. So there's a couple of really expensive, high quality training opportunities that people who are either K-12 or higher ed administrators could participate in. But most of what's out there is like lawyers who've never done the work, who are just like regurgitating the law of like, you know, section 104.4A says you have to do this. And like, that's great to know you have to send this letter, but what are the practical pieces of it? You know, how are you going to, are you just going to email someone this letter? Should you maybe have a conversation with them so you can talk to them about what it means? Like, there's so much more practice than policy in doing Title IX work well. And so my friend Maggie Cousin and I were talking about this. She and I both had like reviewed hundreds of different choices for online training on these topics when we worked together in higher ed. And we were like, we could do this better and cheaper. And we did. So we've created a suite of courses for Title IX coordinators and also for New York State sexual harassment prevention. And we really just want it to be accessible to as many people as possible. And so that we don't have, you know, schools where kids are being bullied because they are transgender or because they're gay or because they're not dressing in the way that someone thinks a girl is supposed to dress or a boy is supposed to dress. And we actually just recently had the opportunity to go to an event that was put on by Willow, and they invited all of, well, I shouldn't say all, they invited a lot of K-12 superintendents and Title IX coordinators to an event to learn more about Title IX, and we gave those superintendents free access to our courses. Awesome. Because we really want people to learn. We want people to do it well.
So I'm not a superintendent. How do I get my access to the course? How do I learn more for me and the listener? But me, I'm asking for myself.
Yeah. So you can just go to our website. It's inclusionsolutionsllc.com. And there's all of the course descriptions are on there. And you can click on them. You can even buy them right from the online portal.
Love it. Love it. And that is in the show notes so people can educate themselves. Is it the kind of thing that you buy? Do you buy it for yourself or can you buy it for your entire team or your entire organization?
Yeah. So people could buy it for themselves if they were just interested in improving their own skills. If they want to buy it for their organization, it's, you know, like most of these things, it's cheaper in bulk. So if you want to buy more than, I don't know, one or two, you can just click the contact us button and Maggie will reach out and talk to you and figure out what's the best way for us to get the courses to you at a price that's reasonable for you.
Beautiful, Morgan. And this isn't just like our opinion. This is research-based information, correct? Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So Maggie is, she has her doctorate in education, and I am a like diehard researcher. I could literally spend probably like a week straight in a law library, just completely happily, not even needing to eat, because I just love the law. I love understanding how it is practically applied to different situations. And there's been a really in New York State, there have been a tremendous amount of research that has been funded both by the state and by the federal government to figure out what is the most effective way to stop harassment and discrimination from happening. And the Biden administration just released a pretty big report. We all thought the Title IX regulations updates were going to be released in May, but instead they released this report, which is a compilation of committees' research on what are the best practices to stop sex and gender-based violence. So we pulled from all of the higher ed researchers who've been doing this work for so long, And also places like the EEOC and other federal government agencies that have done research on the efficacy of training. And that's the resources that we put into the course. So, for example, we know bystander intervention is one of the most effective ways to engage a community in the work of preventing harassment, discrimination, not just sex-based harassment, but if you give people the skills to, and like a toolbox of strategies to be able to approach different situations, and you come from that lens of, we know you don't want to be in a community where this type of behavior happens, like having that best intentions framework instead of the shaking your finger, this is what the law says, don't do it frame, like that's not effective. But if you combine the, we know you want this community to be productive and healthy and respectful, and here's some tools for you to directly approach issues when they come up, it can be transformational. So we included a lot of bystander intervention skills within the course. And in all of the courses, there's a, there are downloadables. So either, you know, here's key terms from the law. So you don't have to read the whole law. You will just give you the definitions and where the definitions are so you can go right to it. Here's a worksheet so that you can take this learning back to your team and talk through what are these strategies, what are these ideas do we think that we might be able to implement? And everything is, all of the resources that we've used are cited to and included in a bibliography at the end of all of the courses.
Boom. I love the toolbox analogy. It's, you know, a toolbox of skills, or a toolbox of strategies rather, because I know personally, we're not all born with the same skills. We might not have the skills, but if we have the toolbox, you give me a hammer and I don't know how to use a hammer, I'll learn. But if I don't have the hammer, I'm just going to try to hammer it in with my fist and get nowhere. Right. So even if we feel like we're not perfect, if we can obtain the right tools, we can get better. As long as our reasoning and our why is strong enough, I feel like any of us can get better at being more inclusive.
Yeah. And that, I'm so glad you said that, because I think that's a big part of what we have tried to infuse into the courses too, is the why behind the laws that created these obligations. So, you know, we share statistics of, you know, this is how many women had the opportunity to participate in sports before 1972 when Title IX was passed. And then this was 5 years later, 10 years later. So you can really see the, oh, it does make a big difference. You know, when you create that access, you can see like this whole new world of talent that's able to emerge.
It's a beautiful thing. And tell me, is it launched yet? I feel like we talked about a quiz where we can quiz ourselves and see where we land on a spectrum. Is that out yet? Can we talk about that?
Yeah, it's not out yet. So Maggie and I
this, and this won't come out for at least 30 to 60 days. So maybe it'll be out, it'll be on my radar.
Yeah, so it's a self-assessment is what we're calling it. So, you know, taking a moment to have a self-assessment before even deciding what courses might I want to take of these offerings out there, not just with MM Inclusions, but just like in general. We are trying to make sure that we're doing it in a way that's going to be inclusive for all people and all backgrounds. And a lot of the research out there has really focused these types of self-assessments, like how do you figure out what your biases are so that you can attend to them, on white men. And so it's like, how do you get white men to figure out what their biases are? But that doesn't really translate to a woman of color or, you know, someone who's not from our culture. So that's what we're trying to tease out now, is like, how do we create a tool? And maybe it needs to be multiple tools that are going to be useful for everyone. But it's, if you don't know what those biases are, if you don't take that pause moment to really reflect on it, you're not even going to really benefit from doing education on those topics, because you'll be like, well, that's not me. And it's everyone. You can't live in our society without having implicit biases live in your being.
Well, at one point we had implicit bias just because we wanted to determine if there was danger or not. If another group would come in and attack our group, our tribe. Well, we don't live in a tribal society like that anymore,
right,
where we need to protect ourselves from the neighbor who's just mowing the lawn. Like, it seems silly.
Right.
This will probably be difficult for me and anyone listening, but I kind of do want to ask you, like, when you're doing that self-assessment and you don't have to publicize your results to anyone, I can imagine.
Right.
Give us like a little nibble, like what are some of the questions we need to be asking ourselves?
So some of the questions that we need to ask ourselves are really about those. It's about that inherent quick feeling we get in different situations. So you had mentioned there's like the fight or flight that we've evolved from. And we don't necessarily need that skill all the time, but sometimes it's still triggered. And so when you have that moment of something being triggered, taking the time to stop and to think. So I have a really old example, which is the only one that's coming to mind. But so my friends, when we were in like middle school, high school, we would have all of these like deep basement conversations. It wasn't a deep basement. There were deep conversations in a basement of my friend Gina's house. And I remember this, I think, was my first conversation about implicit bias. So we had been to the mall because people went to malls back then. And we needed to know what time it was because nobody had cell phones and we didn't wear watches. I feel like a dinosaur talking about this right now, but we needed to know what time it was because we were going to meet her mom to pick us up at the, at the entrance. And, the mall was in a city nearby my small town, which was a more diverse place than my small town was. And, we were looking for someone to ask what time it was. And there were a whole bunch of people in front of us. And I immediately found the one white woman so that I could ask her what time it was. And when we got back that night, we were talking about why there was like a person of color who was sitting on the bench right next to us, probably overhearing the conversation about we don't know what time it is. But you didn't ask him why. Like, what is that that led you to feel that it would be safer to go to this white woman? And it took me a long time to think through that. I'm like, well, I guess it's just, you know, that's, I don't know. Like, that's what I was, she seemed safer to me. And so that's why I went there. And I've had a lot of those moments where, like, I can think about getting on a plane and figuring out who you're sitting next to on the plane. If you're not traveling with family, it's always like who will this person be? Especially if it's a long flight. And if I sit down next to someone and I have like a feeling, like I need to check that. Like, where does that come from? Is that because I actually know any information at all about this human who's sitting next to me? Or is it because I've been inundated with messages from the media, from news stories that always show mugshots of people of color, but not so much, you know, white people? Is that what is causing this little feeling? So, and I've realized some really hard things about myself. So in doing these types of assessments, so I have often been in leadership roles and one of the few women in a leadership role. And I have like about, I don't know, 5 or 10 years ago, I took an assessment. I think it was the Harvard Implicit Bias Assessment. And it kept coming up that I was biased towards working women. And I was like, this is wrong. This is BS. Like, this test is broken. There's no way that I'm biased towards working women. That's all I do. Like, I am a working woman. And of course, I want to encourage and support other women. And it probably wasn't for like 6 months or more that I actually started to like, okay, I'm going to read some books. I'm going to figure out. And I realized that I was applying this. There's like a, you know, a patriarchal structure to a lot of big organizations. And I was using those types of strategies in some of my workspaces rather than engaging in a collaborative, communicative way, which is more my natural state. But I'd learned, like, this is the way you're supposed to be because it's the structure of these big institutions. So, and then I was like, okay, I get it. Now I understand that I have work to do.
Yeah, we all do. And in a second, I want to do rapid fire, but you reminded me of a story that I don't think I've ever even told before. So I'm going off memory, but
okay.
So I'm in my car with my, I think we have a full car. So I'm in my car with my friends, and an African-American appeared to be homeless gentleman walks up to the car. Me personally, I don't know where this comes from, but I don't care who you are. Don't get near my car because I feel unsafe. And the only way to get out is to hurt somebody because I'm in a killing machine, a vehicle. So that's just how I am. Don't know why. So I immediately feel anxious, and he asks us for some change for, you know, for me, all this person just telling another story, like everybody just tells a story. Mm-hmm. And my friend kind of weasels through and like gives a handful. And then I had this, so we gave him a bunch of change. I felt really like weird and icky about it. So then he leaves, we get out of the car. It was actually outside of Java's Coffee. You go into Java's Coffee in Rochester, New York. We get our drinks. He walks in like a minute behind us. He pours the change on the table, orders a coffee, gets the coffee, takes the leftover money and puts it in the tip jar.
Oh, wow.
And I felt like an effing asshole. Oh, this guy's off just, you know, homeless, crackhead, low life. He wanted a cup of coffee.
Yep.
And now that I'm thinking back, I think he probably said, oh, I just need to buy a cup of coffee. But I heard I need to buy drugs.
Yeah.
I've never told that story or reflected on it, but clearly there's a lot of implicit biases going on there that once it was unmasked, I was like, wow, I look silly in that scenario.
And you bet, I feel like you probably felt it somewhere,
in your body. I felt so triggered by myself and myself.
And I feel like that's what we're like, you know, not that we all have to take responsibility for our biases and do the work and, you know, understand them and reflect and make better changes. But we also have to understand, like, they've come from these messages that we've received. Like when you see, like I'm thinking of news, you know, reel that's gone by, it's often, you know,
Rochester has drug issues. There's black crime. You're not safe in certain areas of the city. And then you get this message in your head that guards you. When someone walks up and kindly asks you for some change for coffee, you assume they're going to like murder you, which is freaking stupid.
Right. Yeah. And it's that like your brain trying to process information too quickly and protect you.
Yeah. And I guess depending who you are, you could feel really wow. Okay. I'm going to go down a huge tangent, but believe it or not, Morgan, I'm not going to do it. I'm cutting myself off from the tangent, Morgan, because I had never told that story before. And now I'm getting very inward thinking about it all. I guess that's a good message for people to kind of go inside and ask ourselves some of these questions and, you know, really kind of get into, are we where we want to be and what can we do to change? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that there's, in our culture, we're such a go, 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 do, 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 accomplish the tasks culture. And we are probably not making progress as quickly as we could in lots of different ways because we're not taking that moment to reflect on who's not at this table. How am I, you know, excluding people from this project, this idea that if you did, maybe it would be realized already.
It would be. So we're going to do rapid fire round to close out. I want to get you out the door in time because I know you're an attorney and I don't want you to charge me. I'm just kidding, but
okay.
I'm just messing with you. But before that, tell us one more time how to stay in touch.
So you can reach out to me directly at Morgan@InclusionSolutionsLLC.com or Maggie@InclusionSolutionsLLC.com. And that's our website as well.
Easy peasy. Go to the show notes if you didn't have time to write that down or click rewind 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. We didn't talk much about Rochester. Let's just quickly, and let's say it's the weekend, you're putting the tasks down, you're just going to go have some fun. What are some of the things you like to do on your free time around, you know, Western New York?
I love to go to the Red Wings with my boys. So we have four boys. They all play lots of sports. So when the sun is shining, we actually don't have that many free weekends because we're going to some sporting event or another to watch them play. But I love the Red Wings. I love an afternoon at the ballpark. I also love to just walk around the Park Avenue area with my kids and see the world through their eyes, see what the different things they pick up on, the different art that they notice and what they think about it. And versus, you know, I might just walk right by. I like to go to the garden behind the Science Center. I love that little spot. It's such a cozy spot in the middle of so much activity.
Comfy and cozy. Favorite time of year? We're in the Northeast. Do you have a favorite time of year?
Whatever the time of year is my favorite time of year. I really appreciate all of the seasons. I appreciate summers in Western New York are amazing. We love to go out on the boats and we ski in the winter. So I don't have a favorite. I really try to appreciate each one in the moment.
This is a interesting one. So I'm curious what you're learning right now. You said that you can literally, like, you won't even eat. You love to dive into the research. What's something new and exciting that you're researching or learning about that might interest us?
I am right now spending a lot of time learning about the history of tenure in academia, and I'm doing that in connection with a case that I'm taking to an appeal. Some faculty members lost their job even though they were tenured. Wow. And it's fascinating just to see how it's, you know, evolved from, you know, from Jefferson's great experiment at UVA to today and what the implications of, you know, eating away at tenure are. Like, there's, as more tenured positions go away, they have, schools tend to have more contract faculty, and they tend to be more women or people of color. And so they're being compensated less than a tenured faculty member would be. So that's where my head is at right now. I'm diving into what are the implications of the destruction of the tenure system on our society, particularly as it relates to civil rights.
So fat. We got to do like a 6-part series. Let's close with a magic wand. So you wave a magic wand. It's 2050, and we've come a very long way. What does the world look like, you know, once we've waved that wand? I don't even like the waving the wand concept, because it's not like we're going to poof and then everything's going to change. So we put in the work day to day to create this change. What does 2050 look like?
My ideal 2050 is really demonstrates a significant shift in the way people interact with each other, and that there is no fear-based exclusion. There aren't the snap judgments that people make about someone's appearance and what that means about them as a person. My 2050, my grandkids, great grandkids are able to go to school, and nobody is worried about whether they use he, she pronouns or they, them pronouns, or wear a dress, or, you know, cut their hair short, wear that outward appearance is not the most important thing. It's who they are, how they think, how they interact with others, how they treat other people, that's the most important thing.
Amen. Thank you for your time. I know you've got a client meeting in like 60 seconds, so
yes, yeah.
I'll let you go. I really appreciate you spending the hour with us. It was fun, but it was also eye-opening for me. So thank you again for doing this.
Thank you so much for having me. I had fun as well.
We'll talk real soon.
Okay.
Thanks for listening to Rochester Business Connections. Don't forget to share this, rate, and comment on your favorite platform. You can also email me, ben@valbertmarketing.com. Let's connect soon. Until then, keep thriving, everyone.